In 2007, the Babylon podcast was our last best hope for more Lost Tales. We thought it failed. But after WonderCon, it became something more. Our last best hope for more Lost Tales geeking. The year is 2008. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast. And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
And we have no Jeffrey, but that's okay. Actually, we have no Brad either, but we have a little bit more feedback-a-palooza to finish up.
A little bit more? Do we say maybe a lot of bit more?
Okay, a lot of bit more.
So, you know what? I will say this before we leap into it all. It tells me that I need to, I've got to find the balance.
Of?
Play one or two, you know, on the deep geeking episodes or whatever, and save up just enough so we have the one feedback to lose rather than the two.
Having to split it up into two or three.
Yeah, no, right. So thank you all loyal listeners for bearing with us as we kind of figure this out. I mean, we've only been doing this for 3 years, so.
Yeah, well, we'll figure it out. We'll figure
it out. Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's just start out right off from the first one.
Okay.
Hi, guys. This is Gary. I'm listening to episode 135, and I don't know if I'm at 5, 6, or 8 voicemails. Tim can probably give you a count. But I'm listening to you talk about Garibaldi leaving the station, and I don't think you've given it enough importance. You know, here's, you know, the one character that, you know, pretty much has been with, you know, the station from, you know, day, you know, zero, if not minus one. And, you know, here he is leaving the station for, you know, for really what in a sense is the last time, you know, as a regular, you know, member of the station. Yeah, he comes back for Sleeping All Light at the end, but if I'm not spoiling it for anybody. But, you know, here is our, you know, one of our first main departures really happening, you know, well before the fifth season when everybody starts leaving. And, you know, I just think you need to touch more note or commentary on it. And that's about it, guys. You know, I really wasn't happy to see Garibaldi leave. It was sort of like, you know, page in the book closing, and, you know, you sort of foretold the end. And that's all I have to say about that. But, you know, like I said, I just thought it deserved more than, you know, the few seconds that it got on episode 135. Take care, guys. Bye.
I disagree.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Because he comes back.
Yeah.
If he had left and not come back to B5 at all, if he had stayed on Mars, like he ended up going back to Mars in the middle end of season 5, yeah, that would have made sense, because that would have been his departure, like everybody else's departure at the end of season 5. But he came back, and he came back bloodied, beaten up, and with regrets. He wanted to prove himself. He wanted to prove that, you know, hey, everything you saw me do the past 8 months, that wasn't me.
Yeah, that was, you know, it was a departure, but it wasn't an ending. It was the next. The next chapter of the story.
It was actually a character shift, something that actually had to happen, because there was no way he was going to be able to accomplish the rest of his anything that he wanted to do on B5. He thought he had worn out his welcome.
Yeah, but
with,
you know what?
The confrontation and also his programming. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, you can't do what you want. You only can do what you have to.
That is true.
Hey, Tim, Summer, Jeffrey. This is Logan calling from New Jersey. I just got finished listening to show 131, Gary Palooza. So I figured I would call in and at least be the one random person who isn't Gary for next time. Quick question. I may have missed it in the upcoming shows, which I'm still catching up on, but I was wondering whatever happened to the jerseys, the purple and green jerseys that Summer had talked about and I thought were almost ready. It'd make a great Christmas present, and Christmas is coming upon us again. Thanks for the show, and hopefully you'll be hearing more from me. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Yeah. The one company who I got the farthest with in discussions with that, something changed, and they wanted to make a whole batch of them, which meant we had to buy them all up front instead of just doing the fulfillment of whatever orders came through the website. So right. I'm kind of back to square one with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So eventually at some point,
We will have jerseys.
Yeah.
Because I am not giving up on that dream because yeah. I want a purple jersey, damn it.
Yeah. Oh, I want a green one.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie. I was just listening to show number 126 with the message from Studio Lurker about the competing Warner Brothers division. And everything he said sounds pretty much right on with what JMS has been telling us all the time in his emails about how the many-headed beast of Warner Brothers fight each other. So no real surprises there, unfortunately. That's all. Bye.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you know, there's somebody else coming and take another kick at the horse.
Okay.
But, you know, that's okay.
I got nothing.
Well, you know, we'll see. Well, you know, 20 years from now. Yeah.
It all makes sense to me now. First, the JMS announcement that it's all over for B5 and that he's done with the franchise. And then a few weeks later, Miller Coors LLC announces that it's discontinuing its Zima line of malt liquor beverages. Coincidence? I think not. Miller Coors says their move is due to the, and I quote, weakness in the alternative segment and declining customer interest? Sure it is. My only question is, which came first? Did Miller Coors pull the plug on Zima once they realized there'd be no more product placement opportunities? Or did JMS give up on B5 when he found out that without Zima, the B5 continuity was hopelessly broken? Please discuss. Mark from Miami, out.
Well, there's a time travel loop if I ever heard one.
Maybe that's where Zathras must stop off at Stora to get Zima for trip back to Great War.
No, I...
But Zathras never touched this stuff.
No, I for one, must be honest and never realized that there was a malternative market to begin with.
Hey,
so
can
when,
I say that I giggle like a schoolgirl every time I think of that word?
Malternative? Yeah, I got nothing. The fact that they say that the market softened and I never knew that one existed to begin with. Yeah, right.
Well, it was dominated by Zima.
Uh-huh. I think when you think about it, Zima probably lost out the wine coolers. Come on. Is it, you know, what the Mike's Hard Lemonade, the Mike's Hard Teas, those drinks there?
Right.
Yeah, those weren't malt beverages.
They're not malternatives.
They're not malternatives. Yeah, so I don't know what. Yeah, but the alcoholic energy drink thing, that still blows a gasket in my brain, but more power to you guys. Call
That's
it
right.
Call it Amiz or something.
Talk about wide awake drunks.
Hey, I just want to thank you again for letting me be on the show tonight. Darn, I'm back on voicemail again. Oh well, I hope Tim leaves it on. Anyway, I'm listening to you talk about, you know, Sheridan on episode 135 with the, you know, with the alien ships and everything like that. Well, you know, especially I think you want to avoid Minbari ships, you know. You know, the Battle of the Line and the whole Earth-Minbari War is still fresh in a lot of people's minds. If he started especially trudging out, you know, definitely Minbari ships, it might turn popular sympathy all of popular sympathy back towards Clark and give a rallying cry, you know, of Earth. And, you know, it almost might help Clark solidify his grip by having all of Earth's alliance focus against the supposed new Minbari threat. Just thought, guys. Bye.
Well, you know what? Look, here's the thing, though. And I know we didn't really touch on this when we were geeking on it, but Sheridan shows up in White Stars, and even if you're your run-of-the-mill Earth Alliance citizen, and you may not know much, but you can look at those ships and know that they're not Earth technology, okay? So where does Sheridan get these things? All right, even if you're not necessarily connecting the dots to the Minbari and the Vorlons, they still look like something not of this Earth. So that automatically makes it of alien origin. I mean, I guess, yes, I can understand you don't want to go in there with recognizable Minbari cruisers, but even still, you know, the Clark's people have got to be latching onto that as a propaganda tool.
I don't know, because they're not capital ships. They're larger than Star Furies and Thunderbolts. But they're not capital ships. They can't take the same damage that a cruiser can. And we even hear that later, where in season five, they're having problems manufacturing cruiser-sized White Star ships.
Yeah, but even still, that's irrelevant to the point of the propaganda war.
That's true.
You know, it doesn't matter what size they are. They just look different, you know, and if you're a smart propagandist, you're lashing on to that sucker.
So. Mm. Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Gary here from Jacksonville. He's called twice, and both times they had busy signal. I know it was you. Anyway, I just read today that they discontinued Zima, citing poor sales and lack of interest. It's a sad day.
Now, the funniest part about that is the fact that he called the voicemail line and got a busy signal twice.
You know, I don't know what's causing more consternation in the world of Babylon 5 fandom, JMS's announcement or the demise of Zima.
Oh, man. I don't know. I think people will be lamenting the loss of Zima for longer.
Well, and as the previous caller, an earlier caller, pointed out, it plays havoc with the timeline. So I think that's it. I mean, we're looking at it and we're saying, you know what, with the demise of Zima, the future as we hope it will be may not unfold. We just got to write course, Miller. We got to get a campaign going.
I think if they put out Zima like once a year, that like, you know, like a special Christmas badge, I don't want to be responsible for continuing Zima production. I cannot in good conscience do that intentionally to anybody's taste buds.
Well, we'll have a bundle. We'll roll out a special holiday gift pack of Zima and a copy of the Star Wars holiday special.
Okay.
They're right. Made for each other.
Hey, we'll put that on the back burner for the holidays.
Hi, guys. It's Andy here in the UK. I've listened to the show for a while now, but I never felt the need to call the voicemail number before. I was just catching up on the last few shows on my commute to work and listened to show 133 this morning. Oh, my goodness, just when I said that the show was becoming the same week in, week out, you pulled that out of the bag. I just cannot believe I've listened to a whole show on B5 on knitting on my way to work. It was utterly fantastic. It's one of the best shows in ages. Please, please keep it going. I mean, just brilliant. I mean, you guys are keeping it alive for all of us out there. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Yeah, we're still getting a lot of feedback from our League of Non-Aligned Knitters show.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That was
a great interview.
That was.
And by now, people probably should have heard the one with Jacqueline and Jan from Synthetic Press, which was also another great interview. So yeah, we're trying to keep them coming. You know, so there.
Hey, guys, this is Gary from Jacksonville. I was listening to episode 134, and I just have to say, Gary, you know, your discussion just nailed the, you know, whole deep digging of the show down pat. You know, of course, you know, Tim was agreeing with you and, you know, and filling in voids that you, you know, didn't care to touch on, but you just got it down pat. I want to thank you. You know, I learn something new every time I listen to one of your voicemails, and I really appreciate all you do for the show. Take care, guys. Bye.
I got nothing.
Yeah, what do you say? Nothing. That's it. We love you guys, too. Really, we do. If we didn't, actually, no, I think we'd still do this.
Yeah, we'd still do it. There's no doubt about it. I just, I think that having people like Gary is just given an added dimension. He's got a reputation now. I don't know if you've been listening to some of these calls here.
He's been single-handedly responsible for our voicemail line giving people busy signals. That's that's dedication. That is true dedication. Okay. We will take a quick break and come back with that flapping pile of emails that you've got.
Yeah, just a few.
You've entered the twisted mind of Scott Sigler. You've descended into the inner darkness of Phil Rossi. Now, journey into the imagination of T. Morris. This is Moravi Remastered, the world's first podcast novel, reimagined with a new soundtrack, restored scenes, and the voice talents of Philippa Ballantyne, Christiana Ellis, and George Harab. And the podcast continues in the fall of 2008 with Legacy of Moravi. And in 2009 with an original podcast anthology, The Dragon Clan of Moravi. A project so sweeping in scope, an adventure so epic in scale. It takes two ballsy voiceover professionals to cut the promo. Moravi Remastered. Pirates. Ninjas. And one hell of a good time. Subscribe at www.moravi.net. And enjoy the ride.
And we're back. We're back. We're returned. We have come back from the Zima field trip, the fruitless Zima field trip, and we'll be concluding this round of Feedbackapalooza. But it dawns on me, we need our fans to suggest content for the Babylon podcast once we get done with season 5, then the movies, then Crusade, then Legends of the Rangers, what else is after? Then Lost Tales. We already covered Lost Tales. We could do it again.
Oh yeah, I won't have any problem doing it again.
Yeah, we can do Lost Tales again. You know, Lost Tales.
Well, then
redo.
Then we've got the novels.
Then we have the novels. Do we do the script books?
We can do the script books.
Was it Gary who said he was going to do reviews?
Yeah, he was going to work up some reviews, but he hasn't yet. He's been too busy calling the voicemail line.
Ouch, Gary. All right, so but how do we continue this? Because we have to make sure that we have enough content to get to our fifth season. Because next year is our fourth season.
This is true.
We have to make sure that we get to our fifth season. That's, you know, pretty soon we're going to be like interviewing like the third best boy on, you know, season 3, episode 14.
Yeah, if Jeffrey does his part.
He will.
Yeah, he does. He's always come through for us. You know what? Faith manages.
Yes.
It'll work out. I believe it will. I'm not looking that far ahead, actually. I want to get through the gut-wrenching end of season 4.
Yes.
Now, you know what? Since we did mention Jeffrey's name, we don't have him as such, but we do have him in spirit here.
Hmm.
So let me read this email. This is to us from Michael, who plays Captain Blake on Three-Edged Sword. He writes, "Hi, guys. I've been trying to find where I heard this or read it. Might have been one of the script books or the Babylon 5 magazine, but I read somewhere that in the scene where Garibaldi climbs into the roof..." Oh, actually, this is from... episode title escaping me? It is where Garibaldi and Lise and Wade get attacked by the guys, the telepaths. This is the scene he's talking about.
Is that Rumors, Bargains, and Lies?
No, it was not. It was before that, I thought. Crap, this is the problem with deep geeking. You never keep it straight after a while. All right, never mind. I'm sure we'll get plenty of these emails and voicemails going, "You idiots."
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I read somewhere in the scene where Garibaldi climbs into the roof that what we actually saw isn't what was in the script originally. Originally, it was Garibaldi was to use the boxes too. But as they got knocked over, they left the camera running, and what Garibaldi was doing was Jerry Doyle improvising. Maybe Jeffrey will be able to clarify this. And we get a response from Jeff, actually. Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey responded, "I'm not sure I know what scene he's referring to, but this is highly plausible and really not that uncommon. John Flynn was always good about keeping the camera running when things went askew." I have to say this. I'm impressed whether it was improvised or intentional that Jerry Doyle was able to jump from the floor to that thing, to that opening, and pull himself in. That's an impressive feat. Coming from someone who in gym class managed to do no pull-ups.
So what you're saying is you had no vertical.
I had negative vertical. I was gravity challenged.
I'm trying to be polite and not laugh.
No, that's okay. I believe me, I have no embarrassment about my lack of performance in gym class.
Okay, next one.
That was not an area in which I excelled.
That's okay. That's why you're here.
Yes, exactly. That's what it drove me to. All right, you ready for the next email?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is a quick one. This comes to us from Megan O'Malley, excuse me. I didn't read my own typing. Megan tells us, "No, there's no Zima here in sunny UK, and we don't have Mountain Dew either. Scotland has the orange Earn Brew. Does that help?"
Mm-hmm.
"Love your show. Heard the first episode." Actually, she responded to say she's been listening since the first episode. But that's from Megan with love and an umbrella.
Yes, I've actually tasted the Earn Brew. I believe Ian, the ranting Scotsman from the forums and the old wing in it, brought some with him one time.
And?
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. Very orange.
Oranges in color, oranges in flavor.
Oranges in color. And I have to wonder, is everything in Scotland orange and green? Oh, wait, that's Ireland. That's Ireland with the orange and green, right? Yes, it is. Okay, so what's with the orange beer? Because it's not red. It's orange. Orangey.
I don't know.
Okay, so now we have purple, green, orange, and whatever Zima's color is.
Clear. Transparent.
I don't know. Remember the
crystal.
newer
Ooh,
ones?
Maybe Zima. Maybe they use Zima as a substrate for making data crystals. They took Zima and crystallized it.
They made data crystals out of Zima.
Yeah, sure, why not? What Michael was sending that email around where they found that tequila
great
for creating
diamond film. Sheets, yeah, diamond film. Interesting.
Right.
Yeah,
so maybe Zima is the source of data crystals.
Okay.
They're clear.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, moving right along.
All right, this comes to us from Colin in Minnesota. "Hey, insert current hosts. just wanted to comment on Tim's theory regarding Babylon Stations 1 through 3 having been destroyed by the Shadows, because the Shadows thought that what they were destroying is what we find out is eventually Babylon 4. If you do a bit of digging, Gary's right. Babylon 4 seems to have been much larger than any of the other stations and was the only station with engines. This is all mentioned during In Valen's Name. These were massive, massive engines, as B-4 was the largest vehicle or structure ever built by humans. So I think it's pretty likely that it didn't look at all that much like the smaller predecessors, which lacked such a significant structural element. As for their destruction, I could have sworn that a slightly more specific explanation, the sabotage, was given for at least one of the first three stations, but I may have made that up at some point while watching the series. I had always thought that one of them was suspected to be the work of Home Guard or similar group concerned with the EA dealing with alien governments. This may have been somewhere in the old Babylon Project RPG books, but of course those aren't necessarily canon. And again, there is one explanation given for the destruction of the first three stations that doesn't involve the Shadows at all. Blame Jinxo. Thanks, and keep up the great work.
It was actually in that episode, Grail, where they mentioned that I think it was the third station was done in by sabotage.
Yes, but, you know, that could have also been ultimately an agent of the Shadows.
Hmm.
I don't know. You know, it's interesting. I think that's one of those things that was, I don't recall reading, hearing, or seeing those specifics. I guess from where I came from, I simply assumed it would be the Shadows doing the work because ultimately, you know, they were the ones that would have a vested interest in not seeing the project come online.
Not sure that they were caring a whole lot at the beginning because, you know, it makes sense. The first attempt was kind of a mess, you know, structural failure. And that was the one I never understood because, okay, it's a structural failure, but you're in space. You couldn't just fix the structure?
Well, they spun it up and it came apart.
Ah, so I thought they just never got to that stage of completion. I thought the frame collapsed during construction is what I thought. Because I always thought that they almost finished B3 and it was destroyed by sabotage. They finished B4 and it disappeared, and they finished B5 and it stayed. I always thought 1 and 2 never
got. First castle fell over to the swamp.
Yeah, and then we built the second
one. Second castle fell over the swamp. Third castle burned down, fell over, and then second swamp. Fourth one, yes.
Yes, that one. I was always under the impression that only 3, 4, and 5 were actually completed, and only 4 and 5 really came online.
Well, I figured that only 4 and 5 came online. I don't know. I got the sense that that 1 and 2 also got fairly close to completion and were destroyed in some fashion.
I don't know.
And that's the thing. It was always my impression that it wasn't. I mean, I know they mentioned structural failure, but there was always, in my mind, anyways, there was always the undercurrent that there was some sinister force at work. That if it was structural damage or structural collapse, that's fine, but there was something, you know, somebody had a hand in it. It wasn't just, measured wrong and the thing fell apart.
Yeah, that's what I always thought. You know, the first station suffered from, you know, low bitteritis.
Right. No, see, I always thought that all of them, except for 4, which was obviously taken away in time, that they were all destroyed. That was determined that somebody had done something to those stations that caused them to not come to fruition.
I could have sworn there was something research in either an episode, or it wasn't in a comic book. It was something that was on TV. It was, I don't know. Did they have something?
Yeah, in The Gathering, Sinclair is talking with Lita and says, you know, she says Babylon 5. And he goes, yeah, the first three were destroyed and the fourth one disappeared.
But I, you know, I always thought there was, because I thought that, you know, Jinxo went into more detail in Grail, But I thought in the beginning, did they go into more of it then?
No, I don't recall that at all, because I think In the Beginning was strictly related to the Earth and Bari War in the beginning and the end of that. It was, you know, there was nothing about, I mean, in fact, the only comment about the Babylon Project at all is Delenn's, her monologue at the opening.
That's true.
You know, that says, you know, the aftermath of this war was the birth of a name that would be whispered on a thousand worlds.
I'm going to have to go look now.
I know, me too. No, we have our assignments. We're going to have to start digging on this. Okay. Anything else about that topic?
Nope.
All right, let's go to the next one here. I've got this whole stack of them here. And this would be the last one. This comes to us from Laura Brown in Portland, Oregon. Hi, all. Laura from Portland, Oregon. I just found you guys a couple of months ago, and I'm liking what I hear. I was responding to Summer's question about which Babylon 5 episode do you watch when you're sick. I have to admit that I watch season 3 and or 4. There really isn't one episode. I truly love them all. Many years ago, let's say 1996, when my great-grandmother died, the CD Babylon 5, Volume 2, Messages from Earth, comforted me. Keep up the good work, and thanks for doing what y'all do.
Yeah, I could watch that whole sequence from Messages from Earth and Severed Dreams and the two episodes after that all the time. And what is it? For some reason, Confessions and Lamentations from season two, right?
Yeah, season two, right?
Yeah, I go back to that all the time because it's so moving. To see Franklin, you know, he's anxious and he's excited that he finally figured out the answer to the problem and there's nobody left to save.
Yeah.
And that's just crushing. That's completely it's exhilarating but crushing at the same time. And his whole attitude at the end where the guys at the bar are saying, "Yeah, I heard the Vorlons did it." He's like, "Oh crap. It just never ends."
Now we get idiots to deal with. Yeah. Well, the one I go back to quite often, I almost hate to say it, but it's Sleeping in Light.
Yeah.
I can't wait till we get to speak on that one. We'll get there eventually.
We will get there.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it for email.
Really? We're done?
Yeah. I think we took care of all those that were starting to stack up there. Yeah, that's it.
Wow. This is going to be a short show. Everyone's going to, like...
It's okay.
They'll live.
So people can get on with their lives now after they listen to this one. I've got a whole extra 15 minutes to actually do something constructive with.
Alrighty then. That's right. You know, I want people to start sending in suggestions for what we should cover when we finished covering all of the episodes, all the movies, all of the novels. I don't know. Can we do the magazines? Can we talk about the different?
I don't have enough. I don't have. I think the only magazines that I've got regarding Babylon 5 were a couple of old sci-fi universes.
Mm-hmm. I have like maybe two different Starbursts, but I have all of the Titan. I have the entire Titan run from Titan magazines.
Yeah.
Those are awesome.
I'll have to take your word for it.
They are. Yeah, even the one that has, they have some JMS short stories in them, the timeline, the articles, the interviews, the pictures. I want their stash of pictures.
Yeah.
I would like someone at Titan to just go, "Here, yeah, we have digital copies of all those. Here, have fun.
Someone, we love you. Here, take these."
Yes, that's what I would like. I actually know somebody at Titan Books. I don't know if he can get me the magazine people, though.
Can't well, hurt. You'll have to start. I have to start schmoozing.
We shall see. We shall see. We shall see.
All right.
But yeah, I guess that will do it for our feedback of Palooza Part 2.
Yeah.
And if you want to join in this thing that we do, feel free to send us an email, babylonpodcast@gmail.com. Take part in the never-ending thread that's over at Farpoint Forums under the Babylon Podcast. It's just farpointforums.com. Join in. You'll see forums for all of our shows, almost all of our shows. Slice of Sci-Fi, Cover to Cover, Pod Culture and the Geek Spin, and many, many, many more.
I suppose I should go check that out sometime.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we have a Heroes podcast. And as you know, Bruce Boxleitner has a very small but recurring part in Heroes this year. And we should lament the writer strike for shortening season 2 of Heroes, because apparently having to adjust for that shortening of season 2 shortened Bruce Boxleitner's role in season 3. Kind of disappointing.
Well,
yes, but we'll live.
Yeah.
And go to the website, babylonpodcast.com. Check out everything.
Yeah, show notes.
Show notes. Leave comments. Leave jokes. Hit the donate button. Hit the subscribe button. We are actually being streamed live into Second Life. So
yes.
if you have enough
if
cycles,
you're tired of your first life.
If you have enough cycles on your computer, you can actually listen to this live feed while hanging out at Farpoint Media and Third Life Books in Second Life, and our voicemail number. If you want to try to get in between Gary's voicemails, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
You're the feedback of Blue the finally finished for us all.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the gate.